Hey, let's talk about diamonds. Selecting a diamond for an engagement ring is not an everyday experience. It's an important purchase, and at Shane Company, we make it informative and fun. And honestly, it's easy. Cut, color, clarity, and carat weight are important. They're your four C's. But here's the deal. At Shane Company, we won't just tell you our diamonds are more beautiful. We'll show you. Come in to compare a Shane Company diamond side by side with a non-Shane Company diamond in the same grade. You'll see for yourself that our diamond has more beauty and sparkle. You'll be blown away when you see that two diamonds in the exact same grade can look so different. Our diamond experts examine each diamond individually and hand select each diamond for its beauty. Whether you're shopping in person or online, we have the same rigorous selection process for all the diamonds we sell. Visit us today. You'll have the confidence to pick the diamond that's perfect for you.
Now you have a friend in the jewelry business. Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
Hey, welcome. Welcome to, you know what this is. Bob Saget's here for you. BS number four, letter U. That's why I don't have the gift of Marc Maron with what the fuck to call it WTF, which became the vernacular, but he was on at the moment it started because he's been doing his podcast. That's one of the biggest podcasts that exists for over a decade. And, he's just one of the people I've known for a really long time since the beginning of his career. And I'm older than him, I think by 10 years, because I'm 112. I'm an old sapling. No, saplings are young. Okay. I don't know what I am. I'm an oak. Anyway, Marc Maron's my guest today. And this podcast, you know what you got to do with it. There's a number up there. I'll be calling you guys soonish. See how you're doing. So leave a message at that number. You can rate, review, and subscribe or follow, depending on how you're getting this podcast. And I don't know, leave a comment, make it positive, make me feel good or not. You don't have to do that. You know, I don't demand to have my ego stroked like other people in the world. Other things, no, I got a wife, forget that. Anyway, this is a guy who's been, he's just a great stand-up and has been for a long time. His most recent special is called End Time Fun, and it's on Netflix, and it's really where we are right now. And it was pre-quarantine. He's a guy that's born in New Jersey City and stand up in Austin. He stood up. He did stand up in Boston. He has experienced a lot in life. You know him from shows like Glow, great shows. He's in a movie right now called Stardust, where he plays a record exec that comes in contact with David Bowie. He's got a bunch of movies, different stuff he's working on that he's finishing and new ones to come up. And I just really appreciate everything about him. Here's Marc Maron. I love when you're outside. It's that Jimmy Fallon show look.
Yeah, I sort of cornered the market on this. This is my my contribution to the age of modern media. What are we doing? Do you use the video? Or are you just talking to me? What kind of show is this? Is there a theme? What do you want from me? Jesus Christ, don't you have more famous friends?
No, I like you better. You're like one of my favorite people on this earth. You just don't know it because you're so self-loathing that you can't get over the fact that someone just likes you.
That's true.
And I haven't been able to come over, and I want to. So we're going to do that because we'll just sit socially distant, even though COVID's at its flare-up.
Are you kidding? I just had Brad Williams came over, and we did a podcast. I have a plexiglass shield, and he brought me some macaroons that his wife made. What do we? Is this a video thing, or is it just audio?
I'm going to use video, too. It goes up on the YouTube.
Oh, really?
You do whatever you want. It's mostly audio.
Do people watch it? No, I don't care. I mean,
Not many. This is the Apple Spotify world.
Uh-huh.
Wherever you find your podcasts, if you find them in your trash bin.
Are you enjoying it? Are you sad over there? What's happening with you? Do you have a wife and stuff?
The wife's in the other room doing stuff all the time. She works. She produces videos and stuff for commercials and things. And I've been enjoying this a lot. I'm like a newbie. You know, I'm like almost 70 shows in or something. You've been doing this for 10 years, 12 years?
2009. So it'll be, it was just 10 years in September, I guess. Is that possible?
Yeah. And I was listening to your Glenn Close just now.
Good.
It was really good. And you also have been talking more openly about stuff.
Yeah, I'm pretty open. Why? Yeah. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, when we connected, when I reached out to you a couple months ago, it was fresh. And I've just, life's hard enough. And then I've lost two sisters and my parents, and growing up, I lost an uncle every year, you know, but it's not, I'm divorced. So it's almost like, a death, but it's just more expensive.
Yeah. It's the death that keeps taking.
It's great. It's great. but you, I think as I've gotten older, I've become more like you were when you started, and now you've come to a place where it seems like you're happy. It seems like it more than you've been not happy over the loss of Lynn.
Right.
I don't know what to tell you. You know, it's
well, no,
so,
I mean,
so
know,
many
I know
stages.
You've reached out to me a few times, and it is weird, the stages, because like, you know, yesterday and today was not great. Sometimes you have these dreams. But I mean, you know, you lost a lot of people. A couple of the people the same disease, right?
Well, one sister from scleroderma and the other was 34 from a brain aneurysm, but she had mental health issues. So she was schizophrenic also. So it was a long, slow, drawn out with my 34-year-old sister who had mental illness issues, which is in the DNA of my family, which is just great. But I'm solid for some reason. I'm nuts. I'm nuts.
Yeah.
And you're
and
the same.
Solid, it's weird. That's a very sort of soft definition of solid. I appreciate that.
But you're solid, man. You're together.
I'm taking it. I'm dealing. I mean, like the grief thing is weird because the last couple of days have been rough, and I found myself writing about it a little bit. I might be writing a song. I don't know. But like, you know, some days, like, you know, I've been spending a little bit of time with this woman, but I can't make myself available in any way. But the company's nice. And, you know,
that's healthy. That's like healthy. The fact that you're even allowing yourself to be with a woman.
Is it?
Yeah. To be with somebody. It that also would make you miss her more.
Well, it's just sort of like
you might miss her more in 2 years than you do right now. It's so fucked up.
Is that what your experience?
Mine was sometimes I lost a sister in 1994 that I've been thinking about more lately, you know?
Really?
It's like, yeah. And it's different kinds of missing. But you went through, yours was dramatic. Yours was, you know.
Well, I mean, it was like I didn't know what was happening. And,
right.
And you know, she was sick in my house. And also, we weren't together long enough to, it was all still good. Everything was ahead of us. So it was really kind of, it's terrible. You know, I think about her a lot, and I've sort of been very public about the experience of it.
I'm glad you have. 'Cause when we first connected, I was there just to try to reach out and go, oh man, you know, and then, not to do this, but
I just kept doing the show, you know, and I was like, this is how I live. Maybe it'll help other people, but I don't know what else to do. What am I going to do? It's a COVID. We're going to sit here alone. But I'll tell you, man, people in our community were so supportive, so good, sending me food, calling me, people I never talked to in my life, it really was kind of amazing.
You do find out, I've been finding out more and more what comedians are and how much I am one and how much, I didn't know. I didn't accept it till like 8 years ago that, okay, you're
what do you
a comedian.
Well, what,
I just always wanted something else. I wanted to be able to pick up the phone and go, I want to direct this thing. And they go, okay. And I directed like six things. One of them was a feature, the other TV movie things. And it was like, it didn't pan out yet. So I was talking to Bill Burr about this about a month ago. We're smoking a cigar, which I know you can't do, but you might come back. Who knows?
No, dude, I'm on the edge of it, dude.
I heard. And I'm going, call me first. Bill and I will choose a porch, mine, yours, because
I've been sitting on some Cubans upstairs for a year.
Not people, not like Brad Williams. He's not Cuban.
No, no, he's not Cuban, but I do have some Cuban little people upstairs.
That'd be so hot, and you sit on them, and then you smoke them. But we were sitting there, and I went, Bill, I'm 64 years old, and I haven't even done what I've come here to do. And he said, well, you better fucking hurry up. So,
what did you come here to do?
I want to do what, well, look at you. So we're talking about when I met you, you were the guy that's in that Comedy Store documentary.
Right.
Not the one that's in the present day, Avi.
Yeah.
Avi, I'm 12. But you were, you know, not the happiest, prolific as hell, couldn't stop thinking, knew you were good, didn't understand why it wasn't working. And you're a different human being. You're completely, like if you were talking to that guy
now I thoroughly understand why it isn't working.
I know why it's not working also. I've totally processed why I haven't been able to pick up the phone. But things are starting to happen now. Because in quarantine comes development.
Sure.
That's what you learn. Oh, that's the new Netflix exec? Great.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, man, you know, I guess there's a level of self-acceptance. And I think also with the success that I had and you know, also realizing after experimenting with it for 30 years of bitterness, it just isn't funny. You kind of level off, and I kind of know who I am, and I don't think I've ever been funnier. And
you haven't ever been funnier because you're content. Your bitterness is funny, and it's kind of what happened is the world grew into you.
I think so. And also, I'm just like, I'm okay in my skin, I think, a bit more. And you know what helps? Having people like you. Like, you know, it helps when, you know, you have a following. It helps, you know, over the years, the last decade, I've built up a pretty good following, and I can sell some tickets, and I can do the work I want to do. But it's weird, though, dude. I you know, after doing comedy for, what, almost 40 years now?
Right.
35. I haven't been missing it the quarantine. Again, I've been in grief and, you know, and a lot of other things.
That's a factor, but you've been doing it. You've been outputting a lot. I mean, I'll watch you on Instagram.
Life, man.
Right now you are outputting. You're doing your WTF.
Right.
Which is you're the first person that made use out of what the fuck initialized. And
I started doing the Instagram stories, which is like weird. It's like this morning show, but it was really the intent was to kind of, you know, I was ready to connect to people, and I'm not getting on stage. So it gets my brain freeforming, and it's helpful to me. But now it's sort of like I set my clock. I'm like, well, the ladies are waiting. I've got a little crew that's there every morning of about 800 or 900 people, and they're kind of like, when's he coming? I know it's somewhere between 7 and 8.
It's a lot of people, and they're drinking coffee with you, and they love
they're
you
hanging out. And they're chatting amongst themselves. It's a real little community.
I want you to start blurring your address on your mail. I'm a little concerned.
I try to not do it. I showed my license plate today, but I don't think that's going to lead anywhere. And you
know,
look, if people really want it, it's not hard to figure out where people live. I'm not in any of the Stars Homes books, but
ex-wife's address, because she kept my last name, lives 20 minutes away from me. She gets mail from Germany because they think I live with her. And
yeah, but it's not like threatening, is it? Or is it?
Well, it's from Germany. I mean, I don't know. You figure it out.
It's already a little threatening. It's already a little ominous. You know? It's not from Germany in the past, is it? Because that'd be a problem.
No, that'd be bad if it was took 60 years to get here. But I mean, mail from Washington scares me right now.
Well, mail from I don't know. I get a lot of Armenian real estate pamphlets. So that's
they've been going through a good time. Also, I mean,
terrible time. Not here in Glendale, but in Armenia, it's bad. They seem okay here in Glendale. They've got no one's fighting, no one's bombing them in Glendale.
I've been in Glendale quite a bit. I like Glendale, actually. And
well,
I didn't know
here, right?
Yeah, I've not been able to. I never realized it's 10 minutes from downtown.
It's really like, close to everything. It's weird because you can go straight in to Hollywood. If you go all the way down Brand, it turns into like Hyperion, and then it turns into like Beverly or whatever. You can go all the way
you
down.
You just became your parents. There was this comedian. God, what was his name? He was so funny. He wrote Toy Story, Bob, Bob Shaw.
Yeah.
And Bob, I forgot, you and I know each other a long time.
Well, I know comics.
Yeah.
Bob Shaw, I met Bob Shaw at the original improv in its dying days.
Right.
When Silver was running it on whatever 44th Street, and he was sort of hanging around, and he watched me for the first time. It's before he moved out here and started writing. So he's just this little old Buddha, you know, sitting there in his miserable self.
Oh, he's so miserable and neurotic and funny.
Yeah. But I remember I got off stage, and I'd only met him shortly before, and it was the first time he saw me. He says, "That was funny stuff. I'll let you know how it works."
That's great. Some guys won't come out and say it. You'll just hear it on TV. And then
anywhere he was working, it wasn't going to make a difference.
He did a joke that I wanted to hear it every time he did it, which was, my parents are gone to Europe. So how was your trip? Well, we took La Cienega, and we basically what you were just doing, he explained all the streets. You know, remember where the Safeway used to be? There was there was an Alpha Beta or whatever markets they're naming. And then it's 10 minutes until they get to the airport.
He's very funny. He was on like the first Young Comedian special, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
I was on the ninth, the first one Rodney hosted.
I think he was like on one of the original Young Comedian specials with hair and everything. Whatever happened to that guy that he used to write with, Don McHenry? Remember Don McHenry? Did a little comedy. It was Shaw's writing partner. I think
in New York?
No, here. Don McHenry was another like original
improv
guy. I must
know him. I'm sure I know him. Because what's funny is...
But you didn't start in New York, no?
Well, I did. I was 17. I would take the train up from Philly. I lived in Philly.
Oh.
And then I would take the train and I would do that improv. And at that time, Chris Albrecht, who became the head of HBO.
He used to be a door guy.
He was a manager. Bob, when I was there, Robert Wall was the doorman.
Like when I was there, it was sort of weird and sad. And, you know, Bob Altman was still hanging around. He was doing his jokes. And that guy, Marty, the bipolar guy, Marty, I don't know if you knew him.
Yeah. No, I like Catch better.
Jerry Diner was.
Yeah. I enjoyed Catch because it was more of the people that we kind of knew. Belzer was one of my MCs at Catch, and I was like 18.
Have you talked to him?
No. Is he doing okay? I know he's sick.
He's sick?
Yeah. I'm trying to think if it's, I don't want to say what he's got. It's an autoimmune type of thing.
Oh, God damn it. Is he in France or is he here?
He's a wonderful guy. He might be in France because I know he stopped doing SVU.
I know his brother passed away a few years ago. I fucking love that guy.
Yeah, well, he was one of the originals, man. He would just do shit that nobody would do. He called, and everybody kind of stole his audience style, you know. He'd call guys, you know, a Sparky. You know,
one time years ago when I was starting out, I was a Catch a Rising Star in Boston. I'd already hit the wall out here as a doorman at the Comedy Store and got fucked up on drugs, cleaned up, went back to Boston. And I was hanging out at Catch a Rising Star and hanging out with Garofalo down there. And she, I think, just signed with Messina Baker Miller. And Jimmy Miller, Dennis's brother, was hanging out at Catch, and he was like, "Well, why don't we go do something?" So me and Janine and Jimmy Miller are in a car, and I'm out of my mind, you know, and I'm kind of like, "Dude, what do I got to do? I mean, fuck, man, how do I figure this shit out? Like, how do I get my voice, you know?" And I'm just ranting, and I say to Jimmy, I say, "Your brother figured it out. How'd he get his voice?" And Jimmy Miller goes, "He's doing Belzer."
There was a, hey, cha-cha, hey, but, I just talked to Dennis. I just did I think it's his fourth to last show, his last podcast.
He's
quitting.
Dying?
He's alive. He's going to retire. if somebody quits, if they're a comedian and they quit, they've got to be dying.
Yeah, there's a problem.
Right. I'm dying down here.
What is that guy? What is he? I would have had him on my podcast, but he got nervous.
He would do it. No, I don't think he would now. Now he's pulling away. He doesn't want to do outside his comfort level. I mean, I can get it.
Well, no, he thought that I would take him to task politically. And it's like, I don't know.
Well, it's funny. When they asked me to do his thing, I said, no politics. And I'm like, okay.
Why? Because he doesn't want to stand his ground that he's decided he stands on?
I think he's decided it, but he doesn't like to get into it, which I can kind of get because... I can get so angry. I mean, I don't want to yell at the TV. I'm so tired of it. I'm so tired of calling people names, no matter what network I'm watching.
Get the pig out of the house.
I agree. Michael Rappaport keeps me alive with his Instagrams.
I haven't watched him. You know, it's weird, though. I watched True Romance with this girl last night, and to see a young Michael Rappaport and see the fucking gargantuan, angry Jewish pig he's become.
He's such a beast now.
He's so funny. But like,
he is. He goes, you should watch it just to hear his rants.
I've watched a couple of them. But it's just like, to see him as a kid in that movie, I'm like, I told Kid, I was like, you should see what this fucking guy looks like now. He's like a giant, abominable Jew.
And he says just a worse shit. I mean, he's
fucking cocksucker. This fucking asshole. This fucking fuck you.
Pig
fuck
dick.
You.
Dick stained. Yeah. You know. Yeah. And then the kids. You make fun of the kids. It gets kind of. I'm tired of it all. I'm just tired.
Dude, we're all exhausted. And it's like, I'm not going to feel comfortable until fucking Biden puts his hand on that Bible, buddy.
Because I think he's read it.
I don't care if he's read it or not. I just want this fucking idiot out.
Cliff notes.
Look, I just need a more selective liar. I don't need a fucking lunatic.
You know, Abraham supposedly in the Old Testament, and this is all I know about it because I'm, you know, not a religious dude, and I don't look at the text as being true, the documentary.
It's not journalism, no.
I don't believe it's a court stenographer wrote it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Abraham was going to kill his son, Isaac, because God told him to show him his love for him. And I think if Donald was told to do that, I think Eric would be gone. I think, if God actually came to Trump and said, you got to kill your kid in order to stay president another 8 years, I think.
So that's not the, that wouldn't be a God.
That's the art of the deal. That's a
devil's bargain. Yeah, for sure. I just hope at the end of it, like, he just completely loses his mind and he's
It's Caine Mutiny. It's almost Caine Mutiny.
He's just like, you know, they drag him out. You know, they go in. He's like fucking Ivanka on the desk in the Oval Office. Just like this weird incest trip that happens.
That'll be the soundbite we use. I it's nice to touch your daughter like that around her ass and stuff. And when you kiss her, do it right on the mouth and stay there a little longer. Now, that's a good dad.
Hey, she's your daughter. Do what you want.
Yeah. It's like
when they're your daughter, you do what you want.
Yeah, I mean, she loves you. You love her.
Yeah, what the hell's the problem?
That's how you show your love. Oh, my grandmother.
My own fish the other day.
I saw it, and I showed it to my wife, and we got excited. She made salmon that night. Now, let me ask a question. Was it kind of raw?
No. The smoked fish?
Yeah, you put it in a smoker. Is it a metal smoker?
I have a Traeger, which is a pellet-driven smoker grill. So, and it's got, like, I know I did, like, I did Sable, like deli Sable.
Sable, I was a deli clerk for 7 years.
Yeah, Sable's beautiful. So
Sable's
you take
a gorgeous
Sable,
piece of fish.
You take the Sable, right? And you cover it in salt. And like there's a mixture of salt and garlic powder. So you cover the raw Sable in salt for a few hours to dry cure it. And then you take it out of the salt, you rinse it off, and then you dry it off. And then you put it on a rack and you set it in the fridge with circulation overnight. And then it develops this natural film on it. And then the next day, you put it in the smoker at like 165. And after an hour, you baste it with a little honey. And then after another hour, you baste it with a little more honey. It's done in about 2.5 hours. You take it off, let it cool, sprinkle paprika on it, and let it set. And it's like the smoked fish. So there's nothing raw about it. It's like the smoked fish you get at the deli. Last night, I put a piece of salmon on there, slow cooked it, smoked it at 225 for like an hour and a half. And it's not raw in the milk. You guys, if you're really concerned about that, you stick a thermometer in there. 145 is what you want.
I stick a thermometer in anything I'm concerned about.
I have a thermometer in my ass now.
I put 4 in there because we were having company. So whenever they say they're going to take
I knew when I brought up my ass, you would top it.
Knew it. I won't top it. I'll tap it. But I'm straight as an arrow in a guy's ass.
Yeah.
Fuck. I don't know why people think I'm perverted. I just try to make guys laugh, you know?
No, I know. You just, once you get rolling, it's nothing but filth. I understand.
I don't mean to. I just do it because it's fun. It's fun. When I met Letterman, he was one of my first MCs at the Comedy Store. So you were great in the doc that Mike made, by the way.
Mike's selective vision of the past. Yes.
Mike, through the eyes of Mike.
Yeah.
I was 17. There's a 5-part series of I was 17. Here's how I looked at everyone. And boy, I like these guys more than I thought I would.
I texted him. I said, you know, I just think not enough Bruce Baby Man Baum. I don't know. Where's his episode?
Hey, he was there. And I'm going to Mike. Hey, I emceed that place for 8 years. And there's tons of sets of me. And when Jim Carrey came out naked, he thought I was going to pull the sock off him because he thought I was the dirtiest guy. But I don't want to see dicks, so I'm not the dirtiest guy.
Right.
But they didn't show any of my set. It was like, I was there, Mike. And he goes,
he had a tough task. I can't imagine, you know, like all those fucking pictures, all those names on the walls, any one of them that's not dead that didn't make that doc has got to be pissed off at Mike. I wouldn't want to be in his fucking shoes.
I actually love him, and I actually love the episode I wasn't in at all, and we stayed friends forever. I mean, I directed an episode.
Can you imagine those emails he's getting from like AOL accounts from people that he hasn't heard from?
that says at the bottom, I'm recently switching over to Gmail. But I got Sam Kennison his first spot at the store. Sam's coming in, and I had all these stories, but I got no cred. But then again, do I want cred for that? It's pretty cool.
Look, man, you know, it's like
he was
that
funny
monster,
as fuck.
You know, that monster, you know, on a good night was pretty fucking funny.
I'd come out of the store and he would be sitting there with a bottle of like Jack, and he'd say, Saget, you ever get depressed? And I go, yeah. If you get depressed, you come see me. I'm like, yeah, that's who I'm going to come. I said, Sam, I'm good. But then we, you know, we did drugs in the early 80s in the back room. And I met him in Houston. And he was he got barred from the comedy workshop because of what he was doing. He got banned because he was doing his tent show that he did with Faith Healing, and he was doing a little bit of that, and he was offending people because he talked about Jesus a lot. So to get back at the club, he strapped himself to a telephone pole outside the club in a diaper and a crown of thorns with fake blood, and said that he was treated just like Jesus, and they put it in the Houston Chronicle on the front page of the Arts and Entertainment. So that kind of made him blow up PR wise, but he was unbelievable to watch.
The first time I heard about you, it was funny, like, because, like, oddly, I think the first time I heard about you as a comic, because I don't know if I associated you with as a comic, but it must have been in the late 80s, and I was doing a gig with Frankie Bastille. Do you remember Frankie Bastille?
Yeah.
And he tried to make me his, like, you know, his comic boy bitch, you know, which is what he did. You know, he'd grab these fucking open micers and they'd have to drive him places so he could be on heroin.
Yeah.
And
I didn't hang out with him.
No. Where would you have? I mean, like, I think he was a Cleveland guy, but somehow or another, he ended up in Boston, you know, running away from something. The only guy I knew that, like, he didn't want his name in the paper or on the marquee because he was behind in child support and the IRS was looking for him.
He was funny, though.
He was. Yeah. He was funny.
Is he dead?
Yeah, he's dead.
Oh, you know what? Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
A gift of fine jewelry holds so much meaning. It can really mark a moment. That's why I love being a jewelry consultant at Shane Company. I get so much joy helping our customers find something special for the people they love. Like the customer in the military who wanted to propose to his girlfriend before he was deployed. We rushed to get the engagement ring ready for him, and he was overwhelmed with gratitude. Or the customer who survived cancer. The whole time she was in treatment, her grown daughter was by her side, taking care of her. She told us her daughter had a heart of gold, and to show her appreciation, she gave her a 14-karat gold heart necklace. Another customer came in to get his wife a gift to celebrate their growing family. They were adopting a baby. He picked out a beautiful necklace with the child's birthstone. It's precious moments like these that make my job so meaningful.
Now you have a friend in the jewelry business, Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
All right, we're back.
That was fast.
I wanted to take a break on he's dead. I always thought that's good. He's dead. So
I heard he like died at like his dad's funeral or something. I think he had AIDS. I think like that's a long
story.
Did
he get it from his dad?
Yeah. They both died of it the same day.
Oh, that's so beautiful. The people that we've known, I always think they were alley cats. I mean, when I watched that documentary on the Comedy Store, it was like, oh my God. I mean, I was in that building for 8 years. I emceed when Eddie Murphy worked out Raw. I became friends with Richard, and then I ended up doing a movie with him. And I mean, I was literally, and Robin was trying to figure me out. He's like, well, what's good in this material? You know, and I loved him like so much. If he was alive today, I'd write him an hour. I'd write Robin Williams. Yeah.
He'd just take it. You would need to write it. Just perform it in front of him twice. And
I know.
It would soak in.
But I'm saying he was a vacuum. He literally.
No. The guy
everything.
Was great. Yeah,
it's just but I mean, yeah, it's a double-edged sword with some people. But
I don't think he knew all the time that he was taking
things. He didn't.
It was just I saw it happen. I did a show up in Marin County at that place that Mark Pitta used to book, you know, the Throckmorton Theater.
Oh, okay. I was thinking Tommy T's or one of those places.
No. He was doing this place up there and he lost his mind at me. Pitta did. I don't, you know, whatever. But it's fucking crazy people.
Well, it's a lot of people that are going. I mean, I even said it. Why wasn't I in the Comedy Store doc?
No, I know.
We all do that. And then you look at people. I'm sure sometimes you go, "What the fuck's the big deal with that person?" You know, I don't need that.
I'm doing it now. So
right. That's what I'm saying. Right? Oh yeah, you're doing it right now. We love Mark Pitta, by the way. We love him.
I got no problem with Pitta. But no. So
got out of that well.
He just got mad at me for reasons that I didn't know. That's right. The weirdest thing about most of it is like, you know, he had helped me get Robin on the podcast and, you know, he wanted some sort of credit or he wanted to be on the podcast and I offered him to, like, it just got, you know, the initial anger, that whole sort of like, don't send the email moment, like, you know, pause, take a pause.
Always.
Some people don't do that.
I shouldn't send any emails.
Yeah. I've been the guy that doesn't do that. And it's real hard to come back from that. You know, like when you shoot that one out, that's just bile. It's very hard to be like, hey, man, I know I can read it over and over again. I know exactly what you did.
That's how friendships end. That's how people break up their relationships. That's over a fucking text.
But anyway, so when I saw Robin, so it was one of these I was performing up there and Robin used to hang out up there. So he was up in the fucking balcony booth. You know, and it was so, and no one knew he was there. But like the amazing thing about Robin is like, I do a bit that didn't get the laugh, but I hear him go, oh, and I'm like, dude, and I knew his laugh, right? And I knew he wanted to get involved. I'm like, I'm not, if you acknowledge it, then it's going to be a thing. We're going to do it.
Well, he'll wind up, I wound up on stage with him before,
right, exactly.
which was actually so much fun for me, but I would purposely do all off-road stuff as much as I could. But it's hard to keep up with him. I mean, he's a
I just knew that,
force
like,
of nature.
I didn't need to deal with it. But after the show, you know, he's like, I like that bit where you know, and like a bit that I acted out, you know. And then I realized because he was riffing on my bit, and I'm like, that's how it happens. Like, he sees a bit, he's complimenting me, and then he takes it a couple of steps further in front of you, and the next step is, like, he's doing it. Not because he's stealing it from you. It's just in his head.
But he also did the work and he knew he was doing it. And then he tried real hard to stop and he was guilty of it. And he was like a little kid. You know, we're all like little kids somewhat. You were like an older guy. I would be like a 9-year-old. I talked to Pryor and I said, when did you find out you were funny? And he said 4. So I was 4. But you were probably like 16 is my guess when you found out you were really funny. Is that accurate? Yeah.
No, I think I knew earlier because I remember I used to do, we used to do shows. I did shows when I was in like second and third grade. I used to get on in front of the class with this kid, Jerry. And we used to do bits from Sesame Street. Like he would play Grover and I would be like the setup guy. So like, I must have known something. Like, and I know, I remember like doing funny shit. You know, I it was earlier, but I became dangerously funny to the point where I had to change schools. You know, like in junior high, probably. But
right.
I think it was always sort of in me.
But you never did school plays or any of that stuff. You were just
I did.
Whoa, what plays did you do?
When I was in like seventh or eighth grade, I didn't do theater in high school, but in junior high, I went to a small private school and we did Meet Me in St. Louis, I believe.
That's a musical, isn't it?
I don't remember it being a musical. Maybe it was a...
Maybe the movie, it was Judy Garland, I thought, right?
Yeah, yeah, I feel
so
like
they turned it into one.
Maybe. I remember my grandfather's pocket watch got stolen from the bathroom because I was using it. I had a three-piece green suit. I had one of those, I put these fake beard, like in a Chester Arthur, like no, the kind that just went up the sides. And there's a scene where they throw water at me, you know, and when I walk out the door, someone throws water in my face and everyone's laughing. And I realize that part of my beard was stuck on the door. The water had, you know. That's when I realized, like, well, that's funnier than me when something like that happens. But
when did you do stand up the first time? How old were you and where were you?
I think the first time I did it was at a coffee house in sophomore year of college and at school.
Right. That's and, I was doing it at 17 and then through college.
And then like I did, me and Steve Brill, you know, Brill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him and I, he was a year ahead of me at BU and him and I were friends and we put together an act to audition for this thing, HBO Live on Campus through Catch a Rising Star. It was probably, 82 or 83. So we put together this whole bit and we auditioned for the HBO people and they loved us and we had never done a club before. And then, you know, they put us on stage at the Comedy Connection. We tanked. So we didn't get the gig, but they said we could do a spot at Catch a Rising Star one day. So Brill and I had this shtick. It wasn't really a team as much as it was more sketchy, you know, sketches.
Right.
And ultimately what happened is like, you know, we did it once or twice in a club. It wasn't great. And then I think either graduated or went back to California. And then I started doing it solo, maybe 84 for that summer. I was drinking a lot and doing open mics in Boston. And I couldn't hack it. It was killing me. Just doing those open mics. I played against Sam's when Barry Katz was booking it.
Right.
People like Kenny Rogerson were hosting it. And I would see like DJ Hazard and Dana Gould before he left for San Francisco and
right.
Bobcat. I saw Bobcat have a garage sale on stage at Stitches in Boston when I was in college.
He always did a lot of Andy Kaufman conceptual stuff.
Kenny was around. John Groff started with me.
Wow.
But I quit because I was drinking too much and it was too crazy. And then when I graduated college in 86, after the summer at home, I moved to L.A. to
so
write
you,
with
you drank
with
all
Steve.
Through college. You but you drank all through.
It,
wow.
I did it. I drank and did blow. You know, I somehow. But you know, I mean, like I went to college. It wasn't like I was shaking in the morning. But I mean, you know, I was. Yeah, I was trying to live the artist's life. I did a bit of theater in college. I did some writing. I did some journalism, wrote for the paper, did a lot of stuff.
Were your parents scholarly?
No, they barely knew where I was generally.
That's great. That's great.
They were not scholarly. They were self-involved.
That's nice. That's really great. Good for you.
They were nice, liberal, self-involved people that thought that panic and worry was love.
That's the accurate thing. My family had so much debt though that I could understand the worry, but my mother never let me do anything. I was this guy that couldn't have friends sleep over when I was young. I lived at home during college. So when I came out to LA when I was 21, I went to Temple University in Philly. I did comedy at U of P and I did comedy downtown in Philly. And I went to New York a lot and I did everything. I did sketch comedy with a comedy partner like you did. And then I got the bones to get up by myself, did a lot of musical stuff, and then guitar stuff. And then once I moved to L.A., then I started, 21 years old, I started, like, doing drugs and, you know, hanging out at the Comedy Store.
Finally.
Finally, right? I had a couple years of really good, and it was like, this is what I'm missing, Pleasure Island.
Yeah, yeah.
And I grew, finally. Grew a donkey's tail, and then ate my own feces. That was good.
Then you got the big break. And you had to turn your back on your disgusting mouth.
Well, it's weird because I always had it. And I also want to clarify that Robin Williams is also one of the most generous, beautiful people that ever did stand up. Even
for sure.
And he had an accelerated mind. And when you're on stage with him, he was either a foot behind you or a foot ahead of you on stage physically. So he's either upstaging you or downstaging you.
Yeah.
In any case, the only thing I found that would stop him is I would dry hump him. And he would go, stop it, I'm too hairy. You'll get caught in my hair. You know, I just did a Yiddish Robin.
Yeah.
But he was also incredibly generous. And you know, I don't like when funny people die. I like when non-funny people die. I think that's great.
Mm.
You know, people are not. No, I don't want anybody to die. I mean, the world is so fucked up right now, man. I mean,
yeah, this is like the people who died. Like, you know, there's definitely people I miss. You know, because the one thing I realized over the years, and I always knew it, but like when Lynn died, it's like, you know, we really are this weird community of people. And you know, after you've been around for a while, I mean, I've been doing comedy professionally since 1988. So that's like, what, almost 30 years, 1988, 98, 2008, 2018, over 30 years, 32, 3 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I was talking to Brad Williams about these gigs from like you, when you really kind of, you know, think about like I'm going to go up into the attic over here. I've got a box that has a lot of my old date books from the 80s.
You've like, been throwing a lot of shit out. I saw you at the garbage can this morning.
That's just boxes from that shit comes in. But, Because people send me shit unsolicited because I have a podcast.
Right.
So I get a lot of promo shit and I get gifts and stuff. But the point is that, you know, we may not know each other that well, but one thing we do know about each other is we've committed our lives to this insanity. And it takes a certain type of person, certainly in the old school way, to sort of like commit your life to this insane. It's not even a dream. It's just fucking insane. You've got to be delusional.
I'm doing a drive-in December 12th. I'm fucking doing a drive-in at Irvine at the Spectrum Center in a parking lot. And you know, I'm not going to be near anybody. They're going to be in their cars. So it's
I don't want to do them.
Well, I just want to try it once. I just want to do it once. I went to
Chappelle's. How do you pace yourself?
I don't know. I've done outdoor concerts. I've been in front of 30,000 people before.
Yeah,
so
me too. But
I'm
going to
look at it like
away.
That. I'm going to look at it like that. And I just want to do it once because this time is not going to happen again until we get attacked
you
from
remember
another
it finally?
Universe. Well, so many people are doing drive-ins. It's like, I don't know.
I have not buckled to the pressure yet because that's what's fucked up about comics. Here we all have this nice break to where we're not competing with each other and it's a level playing field. We're all in the same fucking situation. And then someone's fucking doing a drive-in and you got to go like, ah, fuck. Should I do the drive-ins? I should probably do the drive-ins.
Well, I'm doing one. I'm doing one because I heard it's an easy one and it's fun and it's safe. So that being said, they'll probably like have some kind of, I don't know, air jet system where they just shoot
COVID
just
at you?
COVID, just droplets, droplets into my face. You know, like
I took a part in a movie, dude. I'm nervous as fuck, but they say like, you know,
and that's
going to be safe.
What's that movie?
Leslie, it's called.
Oh, I didn't even know about that. I know about the bad guy and I know about Mr. Snake, the bad guys.
Bad guys, yeah, it's an animated thing with Sam Rockwell and Craig Robinson and Awkwafina. Yeah, I play a snake. It's an Australian children's book series, and we've done a lot for that. It's weird with animation. I don't know if they've got everything they need or they don't.
Yeah, they bring you back in as they do stuff. Yeah,
yeah, but it's been fun working with Sam. It's a lot of me and Sam, and then
he's so fucking brilliant.
He's a great guy. He's a nice guy. And then we've got I got that Aretha Franklin movie Respect.
Which,
pushed until like next year.
Like so you're not shooting that yet.
It's done. No, I
shot
it.
Oh, it's done. And that's Jerry Wexler?
Yeah.
How was that experience?
It was great. Yeah, that was great.
You're a really good actor. Did you picture?
I don't know about that.
You're a really good actor. You're a really good actor. I mean, when I watched Glow the first time, I went, you're a really good actor. It was obvious to me. It's the truth. I mean, I'm not a moron totally.
No, so I know.
But, partial. I'm an imbecile.
Yeah. Partial moron.
Are you drinking out of just a pot that you had a plan in?
I've never drank out of this mug, but I have it. It's a big ceramic mug I bought.
It looks like something that the Seven Dwarfs would have. Did Brad Williams bring it?
Yeah, he lives in it.
He's a hobbit. Look what I have. Want to see how old I am? It's going to be backwards. It's The Late Show with Craig Kilborn.
Is that to remind you of an experience where you couldn't get a word in edgewise?
No, he let me do what we do, what you did on Fallon last week, which is you just don't let anybody talk. And
usually that's usually Kilborn's job. Oh, not Kilborn. Is that Kilborn?
Yeah, this is Kilborn.
Oh, no, I was thinking about
Craig Ferguson?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I never had any. Craig and I are friends, so he would let me just go.
I like Craig. We're friends, but it was still sort of like I'd never, been in a situation where the segment producer, you get on the phone with them and they're like, you're supposed to go over bits you're going to do.
Yeah.
And then he starts, it was Bart Coleman, I think. He's like, but like, where were you born? I'm like, what? New Jersey? Uh-huh. And how long did you live in New Jersey? I'm like, what are we doing here? So like, he would
rip up the cards.
Yeah, but they'd ask me like did you graduate? Like, where'd you graduate high school? I'm like, what is he going to throw at me? So you're sitting there, you're already like, where are we going with this?
How did you lose your virginity? That's always a good first one.
He's all right.
I busted my hymen on your guest couch.
How did I lose my virginity? It was not very exciting. It was quick.
I wasn't really asking, but how how old were you?
17.
Yeah, me too. Was it you?
Yeah. What were you wearing? Holy shit.
It was something that pulled up really quick. I was wearing a kilt and you broke my butt hymen.
No.
Why not?
Okay.
My bee hymen.
All right.
It doesn't matter. It's not filth for the sake of filth. Yes, it is.
It's exactly what it is.
No, it isn't. It makes people that are smart go, oh my God. When I first met David Letterman.
You are the definition of filth for the sake of it.
It's not shock value. It's because I'm bored.
I don't have no problem with it. Well, it's well-constructed filth.
If it's done out of your heart, if it comes from your heart.
You have a dirty, filthy heart. That's just
Well, not really. I don't always go there. I mean, my wife doesn't like it at all.
Hey, look, I'm not judging you. I mean, did I trigger something? I'm sorry.
No, I'm fine with it.
You're a little hard on you.
No, it's normal. When I first met Letterman, he had dated a second cousin of mine. And he just went on a date with her. And he said, oh, nice to meet you, Bob. And I said, you're dating my cousin Joyce, and she's no longer with us. And he went, oh, yeah. And I said, you can fuck her if you want. And he literally just did one of those David laughs,
Yeah.
And then I was on his show a bunch. You were on his show a bunch.
Not a bunch, a few times. It was a great privilege.
I carried the one when I looked it up on Wikipedia.
Thank you. So you made it.
I thought you were in double digits.
No, I did it like five times total over my total life. And I did, but I think the last time I did panel, which was a great honor.
Yeah.
I think I did four stand-up spots and then one panel spot. I think maybe three stand-up spots and one panel spot. But like, yeah, it was, and I interviewed Dave and I honestly think he had no recollection of me ever being on his show.
No,
I don't think he knows anybody who was on the show.
But I was on a bunch and he was kind to me.
Yeah.
He knew me and I had a fondness of George Miller, who was his best friend.
But you guys, he knew you from back in the day. Like he knew, I remember the first time I did the show. And I went and I sat down with him, after for when they come back to close the show. And, they cut to break and he comes to me, he goes, can you make that work on the road? And I'm like, yeah.
Well, when you're talking to him during the break, and I used to do Carson a lot, too, which was I did like, I think 13 of each of them, ironically, the same number. And it was always panel. I never did stand up on there because that's not what I did.
TV show too.
I got it. I had the first TV show was a morning show before Full House.
I like doing panel. I did like 50 fucking panels on Conan. Panel's better for me.
And Conan's amazing. He leads you in so perfectly.
There's some guys that are good. He leads you. It's almost too defined. There's some guys that like I actually like Fallon. Fallon is a very good audience.
I do too.
He's like, if he likes you, there are guys that really appreciate when you make their job easier and if you entertain them. Like Fallon, I believe genuinely likes to laugh, and he's sort of like ready. He's like
a little kid.
Yeah, is it going to happen? Are you going to make it happen?
Did last time. You were you are right now, and you just let it roll, and you machine gunned him with it, and he wanted it so bad because we all want it bad right now. We need to laugh because do you watch the news at all? Are you watching it at all?
I'm watching it now over here. No, of course.
Are you writing a screenplay while we're talking?
I got
talking
a lot going on, and I'm jerking off. It's amazing what I'm doing right now.
Well, that's a given. I mean, this is all. All these shots are tits up, so we know.
But I'm on top of what's happening, and it's been rough.
It's frustrating to hear things that some people think are lies, and other people think are lies. And
I can't deal with the fucking level of retardation on a cultural and.
Retardation in the good way, in the bad way, not the special people that are full of love. Most people that are special.
Maybe, you can't use it that way either. Let's do it a different way.
I have a special ed cousin, and his name is Eddie, and I love him.
But I don't want to say they're intellectually challenged. I want to say they're fucking morons.
But
that there's a collective
right. So we're not saying that, but I'm just saying he wants to cancel me just for saying retarded 30 years ago.
Really?
No. I was just trying to say that my special challenged cousin.
Look, I ain't got no problem updating my language. I really have no problem. There's no.
I don't either. I know
as
what.
As long
a fuck.
As I can still say "fucking Jew," I'm okay.
Well, that's good. That self-loathing is a new level.
Not talking about you.
So you're only anti-Semitic when it comes to me. Otherwise, you're pro-Israel.
No, we don't want to open that can of worms. Even if we did it on your podcast, would cause trouble.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is not. I'm not. The Jewish National Fund does not sponsor my podcast. Speaking
they will
of which,
find you.
We'll take one more break. Here comes another break. Sponsored
now?
By
now.
Exactly.
I'm Otis Gyre, and where I'm from, we don't do nice bedtime stories. If that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. However, if it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing for you. Here on Scary Stories Told in the Dark, we bring you immersive original tales about malicious monsters, deadly deals with demons, and the gruesomely grotesque. With short stories from published horror authors to accomplished indie creepypasta authors, which are brought to life through our eerily haunting sound design and narration from yours truly, you're guaranteed to hear the tales that make your skin crawl and your palms sweat. So, dive into the cosmically creepy with us by subscribing to Scary Stories Told in the Dark on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker.
Okay, we're back. And that was a message from the Jewish National Fund.
Oh, they already get in touch with you?
They want me to.
Oh,
I just
talk
did a
to
thing.
Marin. He's not clear on his stance about Israel.
Well, that's confusing. What's been going on, but
how do you know what's going on there?
Because I know nothing. I've been watching the news. I know that we've got they traded for jets, and there's peace in the Middle East, and they moved the embassy to Jerusalem. Netanyahu is beloved and hated. So it's fantastic. That's, sounds like we know exactly what's going on.
I can't. Everything's too complicated.
I don't think Homeland could figure this out.
Nope. But how's it? Do you like your house?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been really nice. Yeah, that's the most important thing. Your house is nice. The last house you were at was nice, but this is nicer, the one you're at. And hey, I haven't been to this one.
No. Hey, you know that Jim Carrey, I heard that Jim Carrey tells the same story about Rodney that you do. Let's clear it up. Do you both have his pot pipe?
No, I have his pot pipe right here. Do you want to see it?
Because Jim says he's got one too.
Oh, then he got one. Here, let me show you something.
So there's more than one.
Yeah, for sure. Here's a box that says RD on it. This is a big ass thing. Here we go. Okay. Just happen to have it here. This is a big box that says RD on it.
That's a cigar box.
It is, and it's where he had his special stuff. And then you open it up, and it's a beautiful thing.
Oh, yeah.
And here's a picture of me with Rodney and Robin and Tim Allen and Lovitz.
Yeah.
And then here is a bottle of Viagra, Rodney Dangerfield Viagra.
That's a good one.
And that's an eBay item. And then here is the pot pipe.
Oh, look at that. That's a kind of a modern one.
Yeah. I love pot, man. I don't care who knows it. I smoke it every day of my life, man. He smoked it the night before I was at the hospital with him, the night before he went in for brain surgery.
You know, I have Mitzi's driver's license.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Whoa. She was not a good driver those last 10 years.
No, she barely knew where her car was.
I feel bad I didn't have closure with her.
Really? What were you looking for? No, Bob.
Well, no, I was like a nephew. I wasn't one of the guys that had sex with her. There were a bunch of those guys. Which
I know.
Were you one of them? You never had sex with her, did you?
I didn't, know. But Jimmy used to say, Jimmy Schubert used to go, I had a pager on my cock.
Jimmy Schubert had sex with Mitzi?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that a secret?
Not anymore.
God damn it.
Damn it all to hell. That upsets me a lot. Not really. I actually went to her funeral. The actual put her in the ground funeral at the cemetery.
I gotta go over there and see the grave.
It's nice. You can do a quick three. They want it clean. Just a quick three clean minutes and no death jokes.
No.
She said, don't work dirty. And I realize now just because she's covered in dirt. So
where's Joey Kamen?
I saw him at the memorial that Mike showed in the documentary a few years ago. He looked exactly the same. He looked like he was Mork in Mork and Mindy with the suspenders, and he had everything but the tennis ball in his mouth.
Karen Bobbitt's daughter reached out to me.
That's sweet. Is Karen okay?
I don't know. I think she is. I think she lives somewhere. I didn't get too far into it, but you know, it was one of these things where I like you. I can't remember what she wrote me about. She says my mother was a comic, and I'm like, I knew her. How's she doing? She goes, she was great, and she said, I'll tell her. So I guess maybe she's okay.
I always liked Karen. She was a nice person. Her daughter. How old's her daughter?
I don't know. Like in her 20s. I mean,
you don't know. So did she come by the house?
No.
Have you been banging some of the daughters of some of the comedians?
Nope. I have not banged any daughters of comedians.
You sure?
Pretty sure.
Now, you were on Glow, which should have had another year, but it got fucked up by COVID.
Yeah.
Which sucks, and it's a great show.
It was a great show. I think that was honest, though. A lot of people think there was something more to it, but how do you shoot a show with that many people?
Yeah.
You know, wrestling. It just was. And I think the problem was they were paying rent on the studios. They were keeping the sets at two sound stages, like indefinitely. I mean, not that I'm sympathizing with the corporate angle, but they could have like cut us a deal and shot a movie to at least wrap the thing up. That's what they should have done. That would have been the right thing to do to honor the story. But I don't think they give a fuck. But they're like, they'll live. So they don't have closure. It's what?
That's what happens with a lot of shows. Netflix will have a show that runs for 1 year and then they won't give them closure or 2 years.
It's weird because you got to end this. If you don't have, and nobody gets it, like a multi-season commitment, you've got to pretty much end the show and at the end of every season. It's got to be enough closure
exactly
to call it a day. But how would that have worked with like The Wire or like the fucking Sopranos? They must have had longer commitments.
I would think so.
HBO's got different structure.
Well, I was watching this show on HBO that's only 6 episodes called 2 Weeks to Live, which I love. And it's a British show. And it's 6 episodes, and they don't know if they're getting picked up. And it's a half hour?
That's the way to go, dude. You know, like 4 seasons max. Like, I did my show on IFC, Marin, and I stopped it after 4 seasons. Because, right. Like, it doesn't pay to start repeating ourselves. I mean, that's how networks work. It's like, we got something, it's working, so let's keep repeating it.
Well, the thing is, if the magic would be to have a network show or any show that you're passionate about, and then let it go through a catharsis and change it every couple of years so that it has a freshness. And people don't want that if something cookie cutter works and
that's
it's making
money.
Right.
So that's
money.
What I did. The last season, I made it weird. You know, I ended up relapsing in the last season, and it was a great way to go out. And I was happy to have control over saying it was done.
Did you have sex with any of the people on the show?
On Glow?
Yeah.
No.
There were so many attractive people.
I had to shut all of that off in my heart and my mind.
That's called being a pro. You learned how to be a pro.
Yeah. These are my coworkers. They're not, you know, don't look at their, just don't.
No, and you don't. And it's like how you would feel about your daughter or your sister.
The weird
sister.
Thing is like it wasn't, not only was I dating somebody, but there was the element of.
Well, that's like, kind of the number one thing. If you're dating someone, you don't. It doesn't even help the process at all. You can't get work done.
No, I just didn't. It was nothing I had to turn off. It just didn't never happen.
Trying to do my work and as an actor, that's the last thing in my mind. Yeah, I've got to figure out what I'm doing.
I just worked. They were coworkers. I love Allison. I love Betty. I love all of them. And, you know, but I did
She's
a lot
wonderful,
of stuff.
Allison.
I did a lot of stuff with Allison and we had good chemistry, but I never thought about really, you know what I mean?
Well, you both were with somebody too, and that's not something I cheated once in my life, and I'll never do it again. I just don't. I can't live. That's the nice Jew part of me that can't. I can't live with it. I can't lie. I can't keep lying upon lying. And I lied till I was 30. I just lied about everything. You know those people that go, I just signed a contract, and I'm doing this movie.
It was like reflexive. You just it was just something you did, like being dirty. You were a dirty liar.
I wasn't always dirty, always.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, my first joke was like, one of my first jokes I ever wrote, I was 17, and it was, I have the brain of a German Shepherd and the body of a 16-year-old boy, and they're both in my car, and I want you to see them. So basically, it's saying that I have a kid.
Yeah.
That I've, and
killed
there's, and the German Shepherd, they're both dead. So yeah. That was my 17-year-old me. So I grew from there.
Joke.
I love like, David Tell.
David Tell's great. Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I was dirtier at a different time.
I remember.
I'm a dirty fucking comic, dude. I mean, I started in the real world. You know, I was never like an alt guy. I know. I had the fucking.
But you have the alt thing though. Like you could go to
I
Largo.
I never loved it. You know, I mean, it was just like I was never that comfortable with. I was always more proud of being a filthy club comic than having to accommodate a precious audience. But I felt like I had to do it. I don't think I was ever a nerd or a full alt guy.
No, I was a nerd. That's why I used the profanity.
We believe it.
You're looking at it. I mean,
I know.
You know, and then I got up there and then I would say this shit and then people would go, wow, I did an HBO special called That Ain't Right. And I said, fuck, like 400 times. I didn't mean to. They were college kids. It was at NYU. So, I mean, whatever.
And my first HBO half hour, my grandmother, you know, got all her friends together to watch it, apparently in Florida.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, I called her to see if she liked it. She goes, you're so filthy.
Yeah.
So I was sad. Doing,
did you, was it because you'd had sex with her at one point?
My grandmother?
Yeah.
I don't like, you know, I think I have PTSD about it. Sure. Didn't you? I mean, most Jewish.
Yeah. I felt bad about it with my bubby.
You bubby fucker.
Well, actually, you know, she made gefilte fish like nobody, and nothing gets me harder than a really... That's the worst thing, gefilte fish. It is the worst thing.
It's like, it's not like... it's. I don't know if it's the worst thing, but it seems like just something that you have to do once or twice a year.
Well, I had to kill the carp. So I worked in a deli, so I had to kill a 60-pound carp.
Oh, so they made it at the deli. There's no... I don't think there's any good version of it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, well, there is. There's if no, you like, cook this it. Is the... It's like a meatball made of fish, but it's done.
I get it. Well, right there. Try to sell that as a great thing.
You're not going to see that as a frozen dinner.
What is it? They're meatballs made of fish. I'm out, I think.
I got try my candied taint loaf. I just, you've become like a cook. That's like your company.
I always like to cook.
Really? Back in the day?
Well, I mean, it goes back for a while. I mean, I don't know, not back when I was living at Crest Hill. I wasn't cooking.
Can't believe
I mean,
you lived at Crest Hill.
I lived in Dice's old room off the kitchen.
If you'd have infrareded that room, you would have never stayed there.
I remember the one time that Dice came over there when I was a doorman and I had that room. He's like, yeah, you're living in this room? You ever get a blowjob in the bathtub? And I'm like, I haven't.
I met a girl. I wanted to date her. She said, I got to tell you something, though. I did date a friend of yours. I said, who? This is 1980. She said, or 1984. I don't know. She said, Andy. I said, Dice? And she went, yeah. And she said, but it didn't work out. You know what he did? He brought me to his place and he played a cassette of his act and he tried to fuck me while his act was playing. I mean, I don't even know if that's true. I mean, I would say maybe he tried to.
It's so weird, you know, when we're comics, like, you know, and we, you know, we all know monsters. And, you know, but like, as a guy to come up with that, you know, he wasn't my generation or anything, but like, the current sort of incarnation of Dice, I like seeing him, you know, and
I do too. I love him.
Yeah. You know, like, like whatever he was doing back then, you know, I didn't love it because I was a doorman when he broke. So like I saw, you know, the final version of what
you saw the rock
him.
Star stuff, yeah. Right?
But like I didn't
but
love
I knew,
it. Like
I thought there was misogyny there to the point of
I just thought it was a gimmick.
Yeah.
But like, and you know, I wasn't registering misogyny back then. You know, I was just watching comics all night long because I was a door guy and I saw Sam and all of them. And they both broke within a year of each other, really. But to see him fucking now walking around in his dumb capri pants and those fucking goggles that he wears.
Yeah.
And to see him get on stage, talk about going to Staples for a half hour.
Yeah.
Fucking great.
It is. And he's become a good actor too. That's the other thing.
I think
thing
he was always
fun.
A good actor, but he's just like, he really does when he's not just doing
he was
dumb
more
shit.
Of a caricature when he acted before.
Oh.
Now he's in a character. Now he's actually able to realize what that is.
And I think, you know, he's a solid dude to the people that he loves.
Right. He called me and he said, we got a tour together. I went, well, I don't know, Andy. He went, you know what? I got to tell you something. You took something from me. I said, what? I've never stolen anything. One guy in Pasadena accused me once of taking a joke, and he wrote a letter to Entertainment Weekly and called me out as stealing a joke. So I wrote a letter back because I was so upset. And it wasn't even, it was a joke that I thought of because sometimes that does happen. And it was saying that It's a Small World at Disneyland should be a shooting gallery. It's a world of bam. It's a world of bam. And it's basically horrific. I mean, it was coming off of the darkness of shootings. You know, it was that kind of poor taste. Why would I even want to claim that? And I only said it on stage once and then to the Entertainment Weekly reporter. That was my mistake that was interviewing me. And then this guy called me a thief, which is insane because why would anybody want to do my material?
That joke. Yeah,
right. So I don't know. Andy said, you didn't used to say fuck as much. I said, wait a minute. Are you saying you own fuck? I said, I don't know. I mean, Lenny
He's
Bruce.
A character.
I mean, Richard, you know.
He's a character. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be close to him. I used to always tell people, like, don't get back when I was a doorman, I'm like, don't get too close to Dice. You'll have a nickname and you'll be doing shit for him.
Snap his finger.
Where's Hot Tub? Hey, Jumpstart. Hey, Muffinhead, come here.
Dollface, give me a cigarette. Yeah, they're in your sleeve, Andy.
Yeah, I never wanted to be too close, but he does have a magnetism. But, you know, I think he's the best story about Dice when I was a door guy. And I'm assuming too much familiarity. He knows me now, but I didn't, you know, I was a door guy. But one night I was living up in Crest Hill. It was me and did you know Todd Lemish, the Todd? He was after you.
I knew the Todd. Todd, he worked the door.
Right.
And he did stand up now and then.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's something broke in his head and he's in Florida, I think, making pretzels.
Yeah, he was not well. Yeah. Something. Yeah, it's sad. I liked him.
Yeah, he was a sweetheart, but he had a problem with this stealing. But so it was me and Lemish, and Jimmy Schubert was living there briefly. And Jimmy had gotten himself into a fight down the parking lot at the Comedy Store late at fucking night. It was like 2 a.m. The place was closing and they busted him. They took him to Beverly Hills Police Station and they needed like $200 to bail him out. And we didn't have no money. So we're sitting there at 2:30 a.m. at Crystal. And I'm like, what are we going to do? And Todd goes, let's call Andy. So, cause you know, Jimmy was Jumpstart, you know, he used to be in the fucking Dice clan before he moved to the Kennison clan. But so Todd calls Dice. He says, Andy, it's Todd. Jimmy's in jail. We got to bail him out. And Dice goes, oh, I was just up counting quarters. I'll meet you over there. And so we're like, all right. So we go down to the police station and he fucking shows up in his shorts and a bag of quarters. And he's counting piles of quarters. He was counting quarters. So we bailed him out with a fucking bag of quarters.
That's insane.
So funny.
I can't believe all
that. Kind of sweet.
Yeah. I mean, we knew sweet people that were all misfits and all outcasts. And some of them at the time when I came up, a lot of people, there was such a comedy boom. It was insane. You know, it was when they showed the heyday, it was Richard and Robin and Michael Keaton was up and all these, Jeff Altman, all these people. And people were rock stars. And then there were a lot of people that shouldn't have been doing it. They should have been accountants. But they would go out and they'd make 150 grand, 200 grand a year.
What happened to Jan Hart?
Jan Hart.
Yeah.
What about, what was her name? Tamika Matsuki?
Mayo Tsuki. She used to live in Crest Hill. Yeah, that's why Sam would always end up there getting fucked up and banging on her door because they used to fuck.
That's nice. It's sweet. Sam really fucked up some shit, which is in the thing.
He was always up there. That made me lose my mind. But Steve Pearl, remember Steve Pearl?
I liked Steve Pearl. He passed on, didn't he?
No.
Oh, okay. Glenn Super passed on. You would not know him, would you?
I remember Glenn Super, the bullhorn guy.
Yeah, the bullhorn. He would go, I use this bullhorn. Some coffee would be nice when the waitress doesn't bring. But he passed. He passed away.
Yeah, I remember. Steve Pearl, he got out of the racket, came into some money, family money, and found a woman. He's up in the Bay Area. But he was sort of a little genius.
See that? I remember that. And I remember seeing him up there, and he was regarded really highly up there. And then Dana Carvey was the person that I was close with coming out of there. And so we became close friends. And we were going, why can't we get a show? We're really talented. We're so good. And so it sounded like you did when you were in the parking lot at the store. And we would go to dinner with our wives. I'll get
that. Be right
that.
Out. Be right out.
Your truck is here. And it was really strange because it was right before, 6 months before Dana got Saturday Night Live and 6 months before I got this show in New York. And then 8 months after that, I got Full House. And then a year after that, I got the video show. Here I was doing all this commercial.
God damn it.
When did you start working for like Avis Trucks? Are you like are you into trucks?
No, it's just, that is my other job. We've got to deliver a mattress.
That's a hard job. You got to have the back. You got to wear the back belt.
I do. I have the back belt.
And then the hook. The hook's on the front of the back belt. So basically, if you do that wrong, you can smash your nuts with the hook on the front of the back belt.
I forgot you were the video show. That was the thing that made you a millionaire, billionaire.
It was. I had two shows, and then I'd go to the Comedy Store and comics would, hey, Saget, give me one of your shows. I was like, dude. This is hilarious.
Richard Pryor used to do when he'd go back home to where he came from.
Yeah.
It's like, you're just doing the same shit you did around here. Give me a dollar. I love that.
Peoria.
Give me a dollar.
Oh, God, I loved him. So you would sit and watch him, right?
He was pretty gone by the time I got there. He came back around a couple times.
Right.
And it's kind of sad. No, he wasn't sick yet, but he wasn't working out there.
Right.
And he came back a couple of times to see Mitzi and do a set. I saw him bomb once, and it was hard for me to watch.
I saw him bomb at both Success Time, which was, that's the ballsy, amazing part. You know, you either got it that night or you don't, and he wanted to just try stuff, and he'd have notes. And then I saw him after the MS started to come in, and he would hold the notes, and they would shake, and that was sad. But he was also brave, you know. He was... There'll only be one Richard Pryor. And think about it, man. He did films for kids. You know, Robin would get on stage and be so dirty, and they would say, I'm dirty. But I didn't do a bit of cunnilingus eating out of inside of my elbow, you know, for like 5 minutes on stage. Robin did. I always do these scleroderma benefits because my sister passed away from one of them, passed away from that. And Robin did the benefit 7 times. And the woman that founded the organization had scleroderma really bad. And it makes you, she passed away from it, of course, and it makes you disfigured, your lips distend, and it eventually you die from pulmonary hypertension, which also COVID is symptomatic of that. And she said, Robin, please, she was hilarious because she loved comedians so much. And so for 35 years, she did these benefits, but I continued to do them. And she died 15 years ago. And she said, Bob, please tell Robin not to do the cunnilingus bit eating out of his arm. And I said, Robin, Mitzi.
Yeah.
There it is. I said, Sharon doesn't want you to do that bit. Course he opens with it because his mind is just, he didn't hear don't do it. And if you tell a comedian don't do it, I did Dave Chappelle's comedy camp. Okay, so I'm backstage, I'm with Chris Tucker and Louis C.K. and Dave, and I said, I got an abortion joke and I don't know what to do. I don't know what I should do. And they said, tell it to us. And I told it to them, and I said, but I'll just claim my way in it and out of it. They simultaneously, Louis C.K. and Dave went open with it. And I did it like third thing I said. It was, you could hear corn growing in the cornfield.
Oh, and they loved it. You should have only heard those two laughing. That would have been
I did. I heard that they were, and there was a shack behind the stage, which was the green room, and they were banging on the wall. Because one, it feels so good. It was the first time I'd done stand-up, and that's why I'm doing the drive-in thing. It just felt good. It just felt good to do it because it's part of me. You know, I'm writing a movie right now, and I've got a couple things in development, but it doesn't – it's not – by the way, I do want to say that your Netflix special is so relevant right now, end-time fun.
Yeah.
And it's so relevant. It's right there. I mean, it's right where we're at.
I know. I had good timing with the end of the world. It all paid off for me. I was right on the pulse of it.
I have a new hour ready. I was ready to go with it. Would have been doing it probably around now. And it was right here. There's a few things I'd remove like 15 minutes out of it because it's just, you got to recognize where we've all gone as a collective.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm sure it'll come back around. I think I've just, you know, the space around, you know, I know how to do nothing. You know, as a comic, you know, I did it for years, wandered around, wrote things down, drank coffee, talked to people.
You do the podcast. It's one of the biggest ones that exists.
No, I'm not complaining, but like,
you read a lot too.
I'm always kind of generating, but you know, what I'm saying is like, I'm sure that once we can do it, I'll be doing it. But I got to go record my podcast. How long do we have to do this?
We're done. I just wanted to say, did you like the Bowie Stardust movie that you did with Johnny Flynn?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting little movie because like it's not really a biopic. It's really this kind of weird 3-week slice of Bowie's life before he really became Bowie. It's a kind of this weird movie where it's a portrait of him at a time where he was unsure of his future, unsure of who he was or how he wanted to approach his art. You know, he was being let loose by his manager was sort of pushing them out, and you know, and the label didn't know what to do with the album.
It seemed like you would have been a better manager for him.
Well, I play this publicist who's just sort of a down on his
from
own
Epic,
luck.
Right?
From Mercury, I think. Mercury. And
I'm really well informed.
It doesn't matter. And then you know, I believe in the guy, but they thought he was just a novelty act with one hit in him.
Right.
And it's sort of this, like, it's an interesting zone to sort of think about Bowie in. So I enjoyed it. Yeah. I mean, I knew that it wasn't on me. It was Johnny Flynn. He's playing Bowie. That's all anyone's going to give a shit about. It's like,
right.
I'll do this guy. I could do this guy in my sleep, but he's going to be the one who's going to fucking take the hit. But people, you know, the press were doing around it. People seem to like it. Like, smart people seem to like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to watch the whole thing. I started watching it, and then I didn't have time to watch all of it because I had some...
Oh, you got a copy? Is that what we're doing this?
No, but I have seen some of it, and I have more to watch.
Okay,
but you're
buddy.
Really good in it.
Thank you.
The wig budget, I hear, was $4 million.
That wig, I was surprised. It looked good. I mean, they definitely put the money into the hair. Like,
when the head turns and the wig stays the same, then you know the
no
budget
good.
Is low. Not good.
Yeah, no, I was okay with that wig. I thought it was okay. Because that guy, the real guy, was much younger than me, and I wasn't really playing him, but whatever.
No, but you're great. I don't care what you think
you're
of
great.
Yourself.
God
you're
damn it.
Fucking awesome, you sable-making Jewish bastard.
Yeah, I got Michael J. Fox on the show tomorrow.
Oh, well, tell him hi. Tell him
no,
hi.
I already talked to him.
Oh, I see. So he's out tomorrow, and this is out soon. I'll tell you when it's out.
Okay, buddy.
I meant my penis. I didn't mean the podcast.
I thought your penis was already out. Now I'm disappointed.
It can't make its mind up. It gets shy. It's like Groundhog Day. If my dick sees its shadow, it's going to be a good day. I wrote a book called Dirty Daddy, which I shouldn't have called it that, but it became a bestseller somehow. But I have like two pages on laying on my back and with an erection, and the sun hits and it tells me what time it is, and just using my body. We take our bodies for granted because you can actually tell time if you have an erection,
right?
And that reminds me that you got to go, and I got a great out, don't I?
The best out I've ever heard. I have to go lay down and see if I can get an erection so I know what time it is.
You have to see when the sun's going to go down by looking at your dick and shade. Well,
I love you, buddy. Thanks
I love
for
you
me.
Too, Mark. I really do. And I'm going to see you soon. I'm going to hit
Good.
You up and we're going to have some fun.
Yeah, maybe. Come sit out front here. It's fine with me. Let me know when you're out here.
Done and done.
All right, buddy. Take it easy.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that was Mark Maron off to do his podcast because that's what he does. He's a machine. And it was nice of him to put me in front of that same Hedges that he did the Jimmy Fallon show with. That was it's a lovely set. It's outdoors. He's perky. He's positive. I recorded this late in the day with him because that's kind of you get him happier. Because in the morning, if you look at his Instagram feed, he's a little grumbly, but he's also real. And that's what I love about him. He's always been real. And he always kind of was positive through his bitterness. And I think all comedians share that, even if they come off as the happiest guy in the world or gal in the world. We all know the truth eventually when you get to see a comedian who they're really like. And he is truly himself. And I'm really glad he was on my show today. So this is Bob Saget's Here For You, and you can call that number up top, leave a message, and I'll be calling. I'll announce it on Twitter or Instagram stories when I'll be doing that. I'm sending you lots of good thoughts. You can rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff to this podcast. And I'll be doing it till the end of time because, you know, that could be soon. No, come on. We're not going anywhere. And I'll just keep doing this. I'm not going anywhere. I got too many people I love. So take care of yourselves, everybody. My next show is going to be fantastic. But this one was Mark Maron. And I just love the guy. All right, everybody take care. Sending you all my best. Bob out.
Hello, friends in the Bay Area. Shane Company has moved to a new location in Cupertino
and those doors are open. We're still on Stevens Creek Boulevard, but down the street from our previous location. You've got to come in. We've kept everything you love about Shane Company, the largest selection of fine jewelry, a relaxing shopping atmosphere with our non-commissioned team, a chance to compare two diamonds side by side, and a view of our jeweler's workshop. We've made a few updates, too. A spacious new showroom, rough gemstones you can actually hold, and a fun selfie station where you can get a photo of yourself in your sparkling jewelry. Find the perfect gift, an engagement ring or something for yourself. We're at 19900 Stevens Creek Boulevard. You can also visit us in San Mateo and Walnut Creek. Now you have a friend in the jewelry business, Shane Company and Shaneco.com.
My fiancé surprised me with an engagement ring from Shane Company. A simple solitaire ring with a beautiful oval diamond. I love it. I had a vision of what I wanted to do with the wedding bands to create my own look and add even more sparkle. Shane Company has so many options, so it was easy to bring it to life. I got two bands. I selected a diamond contour band to go on one side of my engagement ring and a delicate vintage band to go on the other. It's a unique ring stack, and it fits my style. It's totally me. My fiancé got his wedding band at Shane Company, too. I had no idea what he'd gravitate to, because he never wears jewelry. He tried on lots of rings. Turns out, he really liked a black tantalum band. It's masculine and unique, and it suits his personality. The wedding is really soon, and I can't wait to wear my gorgeous new rings every day.
Now you have a friend in the jewelry business. Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.